RadioInfluence.com.
You are in the trenches with former Buccaneers offensive lineman Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.
Hello again, everybody. This is Ian Beckles, and welcome back to In the Trenches. This is going to be a special edition. I have a special guest. Not for the first time. We've had special guests before, but we actually have a topic that I like to, you know, speak on, but I don't have a world of knowledge in the process. So we got the man with all the knowledge in the process, the great Ira Kaufman, formerly of the Tribune, and now is with Joe Bucks Fan or joebucksfan.com. Ira, what's up, brother? How you doing?
Hello, Mr. B. I am packing for Minneapolis in a few weeks, and looking forward to making a case for Mr. John Lynch, my friend.
There you go. Now, this is the third. Is this a third time for that, Ira?
This will be number five, Mr. Beckles. Five.
Five. Okay. Now, I have to ask you this question. I don't know if you know the answer to this. Is there statistics on somebody who is up five times, even if they do make it to the last round, how many of them actually get in? I mean, what are the chances that John Lynch makes it to the Hall of Fame at this point?
I think the chances of Lynch making the Hall are about 80 to 90%. And I didn't say it's going to be this year, although I'm hoping. He's made the final 10.
Okay.
And that's the first cut from 15 to 10. He's made that twice in a row going into this meeting in Minneapolis. So that's a very good indicator that you are getting into the Hall of Fame eventually. Now, look, you know, Lynch won, I think it was 14 times.
Wow.
Harry Carson, maybe 9. Jerome Bettis, 6. I've been through these meetings. The same guy keeps getting back in the room. His stats don't change. The representative's got to make a different speech. And eventually, and sometimes it actually comes down to, you know, hey, we're tired of looking at this guy. He's taking up a spot. Let's get him in. He's got a lot of support. Let's push him over the top.
Now, explain to me, Ira, the way the process works. You step into a room. You're speaking on behalf of John Lynch. Are people coming back at you with questions? Are people coming back at you with debates? Or is it just you speaking and then leaving the podium and that's it? How does that work exactly?
All right. I will have a speech prepared. And I'm of the opinion you go 7 minutes. If you go 20, it's going to hurt you. People are going to fall asleep.
Sure.
So make it snappy. Get your points across. Then I finish, and then the debate begins. Now, the debate is a relative term. And what I mean is, you know, when Ray Lewis, representative, gets up and makes the case for Ray Lewis, there ain't going to be no debate,
nope.
nor should there be. Same thing with Jerry Rice and, you know, Emmitt Smith and whatever. You know, the superstars, LaDainian Tomlinson, no debate. Now, John Lynch is not in that category. Let's be honest.
Sure.
He's not. And maybe Brian Urlacher is not quite in that category. So then the debate begins and the microphones start getting passed around. Now, I'll give you a little insight, Ian, into what happened last year. Safety is an undervalued position. So that's something I'm fighting. I'm going uphill a little bit for whatever reason. Safety, you know, the last 30 years, they haven't put a safety in. I don't know why.
Wow.
They don't value the position. So that's number one. Number two, last year, Brian Dawkins was eligible for the first time. He was in the room. The Philadelphia guy made the speech for Dawkins, and he also made the final 10, by the way.
Okay.
And they're going to be both in the room this year. So when I finished my speech, a couple of guys spoke up for John Lynch in support. I was very pleased about. And then one guy said, all right, I got to ask you a question. I'm noticing that Brian Dawkins was an all-decade player from the 2000s. All-decade safety. John Lynch was not. How do you explain that? Now, Ian, that's a tough moment in front of 48 people. You better have an answer.
Can you use the answer, Ira, that he only played in half of both decades? Does that work?
That is exactly my answer, Mr. B.
There you go, Ira.
You should be in the room with me, my friend.
I'll come with you, bro. You're going to pay for my ticket. I'll come.
Can you handle Minneapolis, Bailey?
Bro, I went to school in Iowa, man. I went to school in Iowa. Minneapolis is definitely a step up. Now, I tell you, both those guys you're talking about, John Lynch and Brian Dawkins, I played with both of them, and I watched both of them come into the locker room as, you know, young whippersnappers with snotty noses. So, I mean, I have the utmost respect for both of them. This is me. I put Brian Dawkins in first. And if you ask me why, I would say what he meant to that defense. And that doesn't mean that really Brian Dawkins is a better football player. I just think that Brian Dawkins meant more to that defense than John Lynch meant to this Buccaneer defense. And that's not talking about its play. I'm talking about if you eliminate John Lynch, there's still a lot of other pieces to that Buccaneer defense. It's not knocking John. I'm just saying if I'm an outsider looking in, that's what I would think. Now, I think, and tell me if you disagree with this, when you look at a Hall of Fame roster of people that are eligible, every single one of them deserves to go. They just can't, and that's it.
That's a great point, Ian. You know, people have to remember, because when the meetings end, they kill us, you know, how could this guy not get in? My answer is always the same. Who do you want to take out? Who do you want to take out? We can only put in a maximum of 5 out of 15. That's 2/3 of these guys are going home, you know, from the Super Bowl site, frustrated and disappointed. That's tough. I would like it to be, you know, 5 to 10 people. Instead, it's 5 maximum. I'll tell you this. Every year, they're going to take 5. They ain't going to take 3.
No way.
They ain't going to leave any spots unturned. So that goes to your point. I look at that list of 15. Boy, you know, these guys were great players. The Hutchinsons, the Fanicas, Kevin Mawai, guys that played in your era. These guys were fantastic players.
Like I said, everyone that will fit this list. Joe Jacoby, to me, doesn't fit this list. And I don't want to disrespect Joe Jacoby, but if you want to look at a list, I want to say that if you pick a guy off the list, he could survive and succeed in any era. And I don't know if Joe Jacoby's that guy. I mean, for me.
That's fair enough. I think, by the way, Ian, I think this is Jacoby's last year.
Okay.
Of eligibility, and then he goes into the senior pool, which is not a terrible thing because most of the guys that are nominated by the senior committee, they get in. They get in because they're not fighting against, the Derek Brooks and the Warren Sapps of the world. They're a separate category. So if you're a senior nominee, like this year, it's Jerry Kramer. Jerry Kramer's going to get in, and so that's the way it is. But I'm a little worried about Lynch, Ian, because Ed Reed is eligible a year from now, and you and I both know that Ed Reed's probably going to sail by Dawkins and Lynch if they don't get in. Now, look, I'm partial to Lynch. You understand that. I'm making the case for Lynch. But I never, last year, I never mentioned Brian Dawkins' name. I never said, took a pot shot at Dawkins because there's nothing to take a pot shot. The guy was incredibly versatile. His numbers are off the charts. And speaking of that, Ian, I don't know how you feel, but you know, Dawkins has incredible statistics. Lynch does not. And, you know, and I've heard that argument about Lynch. Oh, he's only got 26 interceptions, played 15 years. What's going on? Well, Rondé Barber's a walking monument to statistics. I mean, he's unbelievable. And yet, in his first year of eligibility, Ian, Rondé Barber did not make the final list. So I'm not making a speech for Barber. I'm a little surprised at that.
Well, let me speak on that, Ira, okay? And, you know, I'm a Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan, and I watched every Buccaneer game that I wasn't involved in or if I wasn't playing for the Eagles, which that means that since 1990, I've watched them all, okay? So I think I know a little bit about the Buccaneers. Rondé Barber was a fabulous piece of a wonderfully gorgeous puzzle. Now, we've also talked about the ones that can go or ones that can't go. This is where I think Rondé Barber is going to always have a problem. And please tell me if I'm wrong at any time. How many Hall of Fame corners had the luxury of playing with a better cover corner than them every year of their career? How many corners in the Hall of Fame played in a predominantly a zone defense? Just not many. So I think, though, okay, and everybody goes, what about the sacks? Well, you're going to be talking to Deion Sanders, who has 0 sacks. I bet Darryl Green has maybe 1 sack. So I don't know if the sacks are going to really cut it for the Hall of Fame. So although a fabulous player, to me, like I said, you have to be great period. Deion Sanders, Darryl Green, Woodson, I don't care what the system, I don't care what you're playing, they're fabulous. I don't know if we can say that for Rondae Barber. Thoughts?
You know, that's a hell of a point, Ian. And I'll tell you what. And I've heard this when I mentioned Rondae Barber's name. Here's what I hear. System corner.
Yeah.
System corner. And I don't like it because I'm representing Barber and the Bucks. I don't like it. Because I've called Rondae, I thought he might have been the smartest player in football when he played.
Agreed. Agreed.
But your point is taken. I wouldn't call him a cover corner. I can't argue with that. He's not Deion Sanders. He's not.
No, he's not.
He's not Charles Woodson.
Nope.
But he only virtually created the position of slot corner. And smart as hell, Donovan McNabb is not a guy that was known for throwing a lot of picks. And he's just not. He didn't throw a lot of picks.
Mm-hmm.
Rondae Barber bamboozled McNabb time and again.
Sure he did.
And he made the biggest play in Buck history. I don't think there's any question about that. Rondae was a hell of a player, but he's a different kind of player than the guys you mentioned. There's no question about it.
Now, Rondae Barber, obviously, I'm not going to dispute his place in Buccaneer lore, okay? It's way up there. He's going to have a space in the Ring of Fame, and he deserves one. But once again, if you think of Rondae Barber as a football player, you said it. He's one of the more intelligent players, okay? There's no doubt. God-giving ability, I don't know if he had that. And that's what you'd normally see in the Hall of Fame. Like when I see people get interceptions these days, they're great, and they're diving, they're jumping, and the balls hit Rondae Barber in the chest. I don't know if I've seen a DB get hit in the chest more than Rondae Barber. The only other person I saw get hit in the chest more than that was Derek Brooks. So to me, that's more intelligence. Now, I don't want to compare Derek, his whole game, to Rondae Barber's game. But intelligence-wise, I would compare Rondae Barber to Derek Brooks, and I don't think I would do that with many, many players.
Absolutely. And you know, here's one more thing in Rondae's favor, Ian, and I think it counts. This is a big debate in the room. Tell me what you think.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big, big raging debate right now. Is longevity, durability. For instance, Rondae's durability at the position of corner is unmatched in NFL history.
Mm-hmm.
It's unmatched. He went the final, whatever, 13 years. He did not miss a game, not one game, playing corner. And that doesn't mean, Ian, you know this better than anybody, that doesn't mean Rondae Barber wasn't hurt.
No, that definitely doesn't mean that
at all.
No way.
You know that.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the debate, and I'll throw it in your lap. Last year, somebody got in that opens up a whole different dimension, and that guy was Terrell Davis. Now, Terrell Davis is the greatest postseason runner in modern NFL history. He was. But the guy didn't play more than 5 or 6 years. And here comes Tony Boselli, left tackle for the Jags, played about 6 years, fabulous player. Might have been the best at his position. You got Walter Jones, Ogden. He might have been the best for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Might have.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Ian, here's my question.
Yeah.
Some people are trying to claim longevity doesn't count. If you're great, it really doesn't matter if it goes past 3 or 4 or 5 years. To me, longevity has to count. However you want to factor it in, it's got to count for something.
Well, I think longevity will count in the equation. Obviously, durability as well, but longevity can't be at the top of it for me, because if it was just about longevity and you look at just statistic, you might put Vinny Testaverde in the Hall of Fame, because Vinny played for a long damn time,
right,
and threw for a lot of damn yards. Now, going back to Tony Boselli and Terrell Davis, this is me. Neither one of them go in. Not if I'm voting. I'm not voting for Terrell Davis. He wasn't great enough or long enough. Tony Boselli, like you said, Tony Boselli, for 5 years, was one of the greatest, but you can't do that. You're not allowed to do that. Because you can't say for 1 year somebody was the greatest, because to compare Tony Boselli to Anthony Munoz is disrespectful to Anthony Munoz, because he did it twice as long. And Terrell Davis was fantastic, but not, he shouldn't be in the same hall that Emmitt Smith's in, because Emmitt Smith did it for twice as long. So I think longevity is important, but they have to pay a certain amount. I mean, because I said the hardest thing in football, Ira, is not to be playing. It's to stay healthy. So if you can't stay healthy, then you don't deserve to go in the hall. Tony Boselli, probably in the 3 years that I was there playing at the same time, I used to stand up and watch him play while I'm playing. And not many players would do that. And when I mean killing cats, you don't see many people doing that, but I didn't see it for long enough. So it would be disrespectful to Larry Allen's and like I say, Anthony Munoz's and the guys that played forever to let him in for just 6 years. I don't think it's enough.
You know, you make great points, man. I can't believe you and I are on the same wavelength. I'd love to disagree with you, because it makes good radio. That's great radio.
No doubt.
I did not vote for Terrell Davis, even though, you know, he might have been the best at his position for 3 years. He might have been. Fantastic postseason record, without question. Elway doesn't get a Super Bowl without him, no question. But darn it, you know, I want, you know, the Curtis Martins that give me 12 straight, you know, 1,200-yard season.
Yes.
So I'm with you on that. And, you know, in a way, you know, while I'm not arguing with you about Dawkins, Rondé's durability is off the charts.
Sure.
And that's got to count for something.
No, absolutely. For me, it counts for my respect that I have in my body, because I understand what that's about. And some, I saw Rondé Barber in his ninth year in training camp. Rondé Barber walks and with a limp. You ever notice that? One of Rondé Barber's knees don't straighten. And I swear to God, it was eighth year. So he played. I forget about being injured. You're hurt all the damn time. Okay, that's just part of it. And for him to play through that is amazing.
Ian, one guy we haven't mentioned, and give me your insight on this.
Yeah.
Because you respect the pass rushers that were on the other side of the line against you. Simeon Rice made the semifinals, which was a list of about 27 guys.
Yeah.
When they cut it to 15, Simeon didn't make it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's been eligible a long time. You got to be out of football for 5 years. Simeon's been out way more than 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
He never even made the semifinalists till this year. So it was a step forward. I didn't think he was going to make the 15. I think you got to take it in gradual steps. But Simeon Rice was a force of nature.
Mm-hmm.
Ian, where do you rank him? There's a guy named Leslie O'Neill who's got similar stats. He can't seem to get any traction.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you on Simeon Rice, Ian?
Well, first of all, I played against Leslie O'Neill my rookie year, and I hope they burnt that film, because that was bad. I played against a couple, three people in my rookie year that I wasn't ready for. Leslie O'Neill was one of them, and if I never see him again, that'd be too soon. So I got a lot of love for Leslie O'Neill. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. Simeon Rice, I played against Simeon Rice when I was with the Eagles, and Trey Thomas was our left tackle, Florida State kid, number one pick, 6'7", 350. Trey almost played Pro Bowl level his rookie year, but he couldn't block Simeon. So I'm telling you, Simeon was a different rusher, but he wasn't enough of an all-around player for me to be a Hall of Famer, because, like, to put him in the same next to Reggie White or Michael Strahan or, you know, Howie Long, those are all-around players. Simeon wasn't that. I think Simeon's good enough to get a mention and maybe be in the list so people can vote for him, but ultimately, I don't believe he gets in. Once again, it's the hall. It's the hall. If you can't let everybody in. And I think the people that get denied, initially, I think it's saying a lot, because as we go forward in the next little while, there's going to be a bunch of names. And then as we go forward 10 years, the names are going to start stopping, because we'll speak on this as well. What's going to happen to the criteria of the Hall of Fame 10 years from now when running backs don't play but 4 years, because it's going to change here real quick.
No question. And to go along with that, Ian, and this will bring us to the topic of receivers and Moss and Owens, but look at Isaac Bruce, you know, guys like that. Reggie Wayne's going to come down the pike. Ian, a lot of people in that room are calling these guys compilers, guys who play 14 years and they end up with 1,300 catches. You know, 15,000 yards, because it's a passing league now. And when Paul Warfield played, Ian, who I thought was a fantastic player,
mm-hmm.
You know, the Dolphins were a running team. And Warfield still made the Hall. So That's a big difference in the way the game's played.
Well, and then, like I said, the criteria, the numbers are going to change drastically because when I played, and I played in the 90s, that's not that long ago, it started, things were opening up, but you rarely saw 300-yard passers. I see quarterbacks throwing for 380 and losing now. So when you hear Jameis Winston has the most yards, whatever, yeah, because they don't run the ball ever. For the amount of yards you have in passing is the most irrelevant damn thing. How many empty yards did we have this year in passing this year? So I think the criteria is going to be tough, but running backs, as of today, as we speak today, there will never be another Hall of Fame running back. I'm going to say that. Like from this point on, because anybody playing right now that's still playing, Marshawn Lynch being the exception, Adrian Peterson's the other because he's still playing, kind of. But when those guys go out, who do you think the next Hall of Fame? Because you can look at Todd Gurley. You can't tell me Todd Gurley's going to play for 10 years. No way. It ain't going to happen.
Very, very interesting. Very interesting. And, you know, I'm glad you mentioned Peterson because Peterson's going to get in, and I think he deserves it.
Absolutely.
Frank Gore's an interesting guy.
Frank Gore,
I loved his physicality. I love what Gore brought to the table. He's an interesting candidate.
He's a candidate, but I think I saw a statistic. It's 12 years in a row. I think he had 1,000 yards. It's fantastic, but it's just really good. It's not the best.
Yes.
It's not the best. And you have to have other accolades to come along with it. So speaking of accolades, you've put, if I'm not mistaken, to this point, is it just Sapp and Brooks, or did you help with Dungy as well?
I did the presentation for Dungy.
Okay.
I did.
Okay, so you had those three. Out of those three, who was the toughest speech to write? I'm gonna say Sapp, because I think that angle had to be a little bit different. Because okay, once again, I play with all of them. I play with Sapp, Brooks, and I had Tony Dungy as well. Tony Dungy's easy. Derek Brooks is easy. Warren Sapp is fantastic, but he had to have been a little bit harder.
Ian, let me put it like this. Jerry Petuck could have got Brooks in the hall. Jerry Petuck.
Yeah, the great Jerry Petuck.
So let's take care of that right there.
Yeah.
Dungy took three times around. And I think you'd agree with me in my presentation. I didn't want to go overboard with his role as the conscience of the league and the minority stuff. No. You got to win. You got to win. Mm-hmm. Then that other stuff comes in. And what people don't realize about Dungy is he had an incredible winning percentage. I mean, historic. And yeah, he had Peyton Manning in, but you know, he had Trent Dilfer. Mm-hmm. You know, also. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as far as Sapp's concerned, Ian, I'm going to tell you a quick story, and you'd appreciate this more than anybody. I was doing my prep work for Sapp, and I take this stuff very seriously. You know that. Because I know how much it means to the players.
Sure.
I know how much it means. You know, other than their wedding day, birth of their kid, this is the biggest day of their life.
Mm-hmm.
Finally recognized for individual achievement. That's something Derek Brooks didn't think a lot about, individual achievement, till that day. So I'm doing my prep work, and I'm making my phone calls for Sapp, and I'm getting some quotes, and I knew that these writers, you know, they're waiting on Sapp. They want to make him wait. They didn't like this guy, and he treated him rough, and let him wait. He ain't going to get in first year. And I knew that was kind of the attitude, prevailing attitude. My job was to keep the focus on Sapp, the football player. Well, one of the guys I called was Keyshawn Johnson. Now, Ian, you know this. Sapp and Keyshawn, they didn't get along. And in that debate, I was all on Sapp's side. All on Sapp. Sapp's a pain in the ass. Yes, Sapp does that. He doesn't want to sign autographs. But Sapp was all about the team, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Keyshawn wasn't. So I'm on Sapp's side. But I called Johnson, and I got him in L.A., and I said, Key, I'm giving a speech for Warren Sapp in 2 weeks in New Orleans. Should he have a bust in Canton? And Johnson said, yeah, he should be in there. He's an asshole, but he belongs. He's an asshole, but he belongs. When he said that, and I was standing next to Martin Fennelly and Joey Johnston in the office of the late, great Tampa Tribune, and when I hung up the phone with Johnson, I said, gentlemen, I just got my opening line from my presentation. And that's what I did. I said in the immortal words of Keyshawn Johnson, and one guy said, Ira, nobody's ever used that word in this room. I said, well, I just did. And That says it all, Ian. That says it all.
Well, I mean,
I didn't defend Sapp's character, but I said it doesn't matter. It absolutely doesn't matter.
Now, let's go back to the Hall, okay? Let's talk about character in the Hall. Lawrence Taylor? I mean, okay, if it was, I mean, seriously, I mean, the guy, if somebody had to talk on behalf of Lawrence Taylor, I would never talk about him other than just playing football. Like, character-wise, it wasn't, but that's what we're voting on. And this is what I'm going to ask you, Ira. Obviously, you guys, how many people vote on the Hall of Fame? What's the number of
is, I think 48.
Okay, 48 people vote on the Hall of Fame. And are they all writers?
No. A bunch of ESPN people, broadcasters. I would say maybe 30, 35 writers and the rest maybe broadcast.
Okay. Yeah. So when the Hall of Fame numbers come up and I see somebody like Terrell Owens who doesn't go in, okay? Now, I say this. It's your vote. You can do as you please. But have you ever, just be honest with me now, and I think you will, have you ever used somebody off the field or what they did off the field to keep them out of the Hall of Fame? Because nowhere on that bus does it say he was a model citizen or he did charity work. That bus is for being one of the baddest MFers on a football field. If that's the case, Terrell Owens should have had 48 positive votes. Now, when it comes to being personal, that's why people are getting, maybe Terrell Davis pissed one of them off or dissed one of them in the press. I don't know what it is, but if it gets to that, I don't know if that vote is legitimate to me. To me, it should be just what's happening on the field. Is that the way you approach your vote?
This is the biggest issue, in the room. There's no question about it. You got your finger right on it. Owens is the test case, you know. Now, look, I'm going to be totally honest with you because that's what you deserve.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike baseball, which has this character clause, it does, Pro Football Hall of Fame does not. And it says you should restrict yourself to what the person did as a football player on the football field. That is the raging debate about Owens. Now, I'm gonna admit it.
Mm-hmm.
I have not voted for Owens, and okay. I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
I have never had any personal relations with Owens. I don't care how he felt with the media. Sapp didn't talk to me for 6 years. What do I care?
You're lucky.
He still belongs in the Hall of Fame. Owens is different in this respect, Ian, and maybe you don't want to go there. I understand.
All right.
But the knock on Owens is bad teammate. Really bad teammate. And I'm of the opinion that the locker room is kind of an extension of the football field. I am.
Okay.
This is not Warren Sapp not signing an autograph. It's totally different. It's not Terrell Owens, disrespecting the media. It's not that. So we hear from the guys, the Andy Reids, the Steve Youngs, the McNabbs, when they know that they're going to speak in confidence because it's not going to leave the room. And we get a different portrayal of Owens than everybody gets when an ESPN camera is in front of Andy Reid or whatever.
Okay.
We get it different. And I'm also going to say this. I have changed my mind. I have changed my mind on Terrell Owens. I'm leaning towards voting for Owens, and I'm going to tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
Because since the last meeting, I've talked to other people. While I'm talking to them about Rondé Barber and John Lynch or whatever, and I bring up Owens, people that I respect, that played, coached, whatever. And these people have told me in the last year, Ira, I'm not going to vouch for him as a teammate, but he was too good a player. Mm. He was too good. He was transcendent. He wasn't borderline. I have changed my mind. I'm going to vote for Terrell Owens. I don't want any medals pinned on me, but that's the dynamic that's going on with me. I've learned a few things and been told that I've been unfair from people that I respect, and I've changed my mind.
Well, good. That means you're growing, Ira. That's good. We're never too old to grow. That's for sure. Now, this is going to be the first time we disagree on something. This is where I disagree. I think there's a locker room, and I know where the locker room is, and I've been in the locker room. I grew up in it. You have to understand that you guys have never been in the locker room. Do you know what I mean when I say that?
Yes.
Okay, so you stepped in the building, but you've never been in the locker room, because the second the press gets in the locker room, it's not the locker room anymore. It can't be. We have to shut it down. The second a coach walks in the locker room, it shuts down. It's not real anymore because it's just a little bit different. Now, you have to watch out.
As soon as the camera goes in there, it's different.
Yeah, it's not the locker room anymore. So you have to watch out for this, okay? A lot of times the media or the press will get a person's opinion. So if you go to Donovan McNabb and you ask Donovan McNabb what type of teammate Terrell Owens was, he may say he's the worst. Now, I remember going through it and watching it. You know what I saw? I saw a football team that was half Terrell Owens, half Donovan McNabb. That's what I saw, because there's a lot of people that spoke on behalf of Terrell Owens as a teammate. If way back when you'd have asked about Warren Sapp as a teammate, I bet the press would say he's a terrible teammate because he doesn't talk to them. If they'd asked us, I'd say Warren's a great teammate, because I know one thing. He's going to show up on Sunday. Warren don't take no junk. Warren's attitude rubs off on everybody. And Warren's a loyal dude. So I think it's hard sometimes because there's always two sides. And this is where you have to watch out, because sometimes people take athletes talking to the press as being good teammates. Those are two different things for me, because a lot of times athletes that are kiss asses and athletes that are coaches' pets sometimes are the ones that are talking to the press the most. And the coach may say he's great, the press may say he's great, and the rest of the locker room may say he's a kiss ass. So those are some of the things that I've seen that can get funky, and maybe you can't see that angle unless you sat where I sat, because I've sat in the locker room looking out and in the media looking in, and there's a lot of funky stuff happening in there.
Ian, if Owens was, in fact, was, mm-hmm. and that's a question, was a divisive force with the Eagles, Cowboys, whatever, 49ers, should that count in our consideration? Should it?
I don't know what the word divisive means. I really don't, because, like I said, if half the locker room is Donovan McNabb and half is Terrell Owens, they're both being divisive. You see what I'm saying? Like, you got to figure this. When Chucky and Keyshawn were going at it, I bet there was a lot of people on Chucky's side, because Keyshawn, like you said the word asshole, I don't know a bigger asshole than Keyshawn Johnson, okay? And if he was on fire, I wouldn't urinate on him if he was on fire, I swear to God, okay? And I've talked to Warren Sapp about Keyshawn. This is what I said to Warren. What's up with your boy Keyshawn? He stopped, he looked at me, and this is what, I'm still not going to say the word, even though it's a podcast. He said, Keyshawn's the fakest N I've ever seen in my life. That's quite the statement. Right. That's quite a statement. So to me, and the problem with some of these athletes like a Keyshawn Johnson, the problem with him is I was there. I was in the locker room with Keyshawn Johnson with the Jets. He doesn't remember, but I was there. Everybody thought he was a bitch there. Then he was here in Tampa. Everybody thought he was a bitch here. And Keyshawn is just one of those guys that it's about him. He doesn't care about anybody else. Great football player. When I hear people talk bad about Keyshawn as a football player, I'll stop them. And I go, listen, in a crowd, I'm not sure there's a better football player ever than Keyshawn. He's just a bitch in the locker room. And between Sapp and Keyshawn, that feud, I'll go Sapp. And between Chucky and Keyshawn, I'll take a flyer. I'll take neither one of those guys.
You know, you're right. I'm with Sapp all day long. In that battle, and you and I know why Sapp didn't respect Keyshawn, Ian, because Sapp went to bat for him with Coach Dungy and McKay and helped get him on the Bucks, and then the guy doesn't show up for OTAs. That's bad, Ian. That's bad, yeah, and I don't blame Sapp one bit for not respecting him.
Ira, I was in the locker room with the Jets. I wasn't there for a long time, maybe 3 weeks, and I found the amount of stars in that Jets locker room in 99, I think it was. I mean, Kevin Mawai, Jumbo Elliott, Curtis Martin, Vinny Testaverde, Steve Atwater, Brian Cox, amazing amount of Wayne Krabet. Brian Cox pushed Keyshawn when he had his towel coming out of the shower one time, and Keyshawn didn't do nothing. And I look at Brian, I go, what's up with that? Well, you don't like Keyshawn? He looks at me and goes, don't nobody like Keyshawn, dude. He looked at me, it was don't nobody like Keyshawn. So that wasn't just Sapp speaking out against Keyshawn. Listen, I was in the locker room one time. I asked Keyshawn for an autograph. And the ironic part was he was sitting in my old locker. He's sitting in my old locker. And I asked him for an autograph for a charity event. He looks at me for 1 second. He puts his hand out. He looks away from me and starts talking to his boy. He signs the ball, gives it back to me, and doesn't look back at me. You see what I'm saying? I asked Brad Johnson for an autograph. Brad said, hey, man, what charity is it? Hey, man, if I can help you out in any other way, let me know, man. I mean, tell your wife she's doing a great stuff. And I was like, look at the difference between those things. Brad Johnson, I swear to God, if he needed my help today, I'd go help Brad Johnson. I didn't even play with that dude. Keyshawn Johnson, I wouldn't piss on him. That's real talk.
Ian, what about, now there's another guy in the room this year. Now if you think Owens is polarizing, here comes Randy Moss, my friend. First time eligible. I'll give you my take quick and give me yours because okay. I want to know.
Yep.
My take, I think Moss was a little bit better player. A little. I think Moss was a little bit better. But, Ian, here we go again with the character or whatever. Moss didn't always play hard, and I think Owens did always play hard. Is that a factor if you're sitting in that room judging Randy Moss?
For me, if I start with, I say, how do you describe Randy Moss? Randy Moss was the best, and if I can put a few things behind that, ever. He was the best long threat ever. He was the best at going up and getting the ball in any type of, the best ever. He was probably the fastest receiver ever. And when you put the statistics up against it, I don't give a rat's ass the way he was in the locker room. I really don't. Not with those statistics. I mean, there's heathens in the Hall of Fame, okay? Randy Moss was just a free-spirited young kid that was wild. He ain't no different than a young John Riggins and a lot of other people. It's a different age. Not everybody got him because, let's be honest, he's probably a little too black for a lot of people. That's real. He was too black for a lot of people. But Randy Moss, along with Terrell Owens, I think if you ask a lot of his teammates, like Chris Carter will say, Randy came in as a free spirit, but he loved the game and he was a student of the game. At the end of his career, when he was in New England, they said Randy would take all the young kids aside, teaching them. See, that's hot. People don't hear all that stuff. They just see the crazy brother with the afro and he's this and he's that. What he is somebody who you put on your offense, you got to take two or three of your defenders and put them over there, or he's going to put his hand up 5 yards into the route. And it's going to be a touchdown. So to me, he's the best deep threat ever. First ballot in, period. If you don't vote for Randy Moss, shame on you.
I'm with you. You know, I don't think the league had ever seen anybody like him when he came in. Never, nope. never seen anything like him.
Durability as well. Randy Moss, I don't remember him missing games almost ever. I don't remember him being hurt.
Now, his years in Oakland were not good, Ian. Not good. And he looked a little disinterested. He did.
I don't think Randy Moss is a good player on a bad team. That's not the best feel ever. But if you put his whole career together, there's a lot of Hall of Famers getting burned in there because you couldn't put one guy on Randy Moss. If you were to say somebody's Randy Moss today in this NFL, who would you say? Because you can't say Julio Jones because Julio Jones does not go vertical like Randy Moss. No way.
Maybe Calvin Johnson from a few years ago. Maybe.
He wasn't as fast as Randy. He's a physical. He wasn't as fast as Randy was. But Calvin,
right.
Calvin's pretty fantastic. But
AJ Green, but he's no Randy Moss.
No. AJ Green has a talent too. But like I said, when I look at this list of players, when you talk about Alan Faneca, Greg Gard, Steve Hutchinson. And the thing, when you talk about guards, I know how great these guys were. And they were blocking the same guys I was blocking at times. And they were playing around. We talk about Larry Allen. When Larry Allen was up there, and somebody's like, was Larry Allen good? And I go, well, I mean, I was trying to do the same thing. And when they put the Dallas Cowboy film on, and Juan Castillo was our offensive line coach in Philadelphia, and we're playing against Eric Swan the next week, who was always a handful. And the week before, they played the Cowboys. And I'm sitting there watching Larry Allen block Eric Swan, and I go, change the film. It doesn't give me it, because no other human being is that damn big and that damn strong and can eat somebody up like that. So when I talk about different level, like Steve Hutchinson, Alan Faneca was great. But when you, like I said, Joe Jacoby to me doesn't fit with the rest of them. And there's another name on here, Everson Walls with the Dallas Cowboys. That's a funky name for me because I grew up as a Dallas Cowboy fan. I don't know if anybody was a ball hawk like that, but Everson got burnt a lot, and Everson was slow. So I'm not sure he's a Hall of Famer myself.
You're right. He did get burned a lot. Now, Ian, one thing about guards, and it's right up your alley.
Yep.
And I'm telling you the truth here. I've been on this thing since 2005. I took over for Tom McEwen, great Tom McEwen.
Great Tom.
And by the way, McEwen recommended me. He wanted to keep it in the Tribune family, keep it in-house. And, Ian, I remember going up to McEwen my first year. I think the Super Bowl was in Detroit. And in 05, and I'm going up there, and a couple of weeks before, I said, Tom, any advice for me going in there into that room for the first time? And he goes, Calvin, keep your mouth shut. Keep your mouth shut. And that wasn't easy for me, Ian. You know me. Now, listen, Ian, I've been doing it for 12 years, and I'm being honest here. I've said this to other guys in the room.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who has come before me with, to me, one of, I don't know, I wouldn't say the most unblemished, but one of the most top three unblemished first ballot Hall of Famers, no questions asked, next, and it took him 3 years to get in, happens to be a guard, Will Shields.
Will Shields was
Will
fantastic.
Will Shields was one fantastic football player.
Yes, he was.
Fantastic.
For a long time. To me, I would compare Will Shields to Walter Jones. I mean, that's how good he was. Walter Jones was pretty freaking good. I mean, we're a long way from Seattle, but I mean, there was a lot of crazy stuff. I used to watch, like, Jonathan Ogden. Those guys were almost from different planets. Like, I ran into Jonathan Ogden in person, and I looked, and I stood up next to him, and I looked at somebody and go, do you know we kind of play the same position? Because there's nothing that on my body looks like his body. And they sure had a physique to make the job look and seem easy. When you're 6'8" and you have long arms and you're 330 pounds and they made it look really easy. Those are the guys who deserve to be in there.
I think I'm with you. I think Jones was the best between him, Ogden, the Rams guy.
Pace, Orlando Pace. Orlando Pace.
Yeah, Orlando Pace. And then you had Willie Rofe, was a hell of a player.
He was.
I think Jones was the best of that bunch.
Well, but you know what? I mean, you're talking about the best tackles of all time. And please, all due respect, if you don't put Anthony Munoz in there, we're going to have a problem. We're going to have a problem.
Well, I'm just saying.
The latest guy. Yeah, but if you go before that, other than Anthony Munoz, you can't really bring any names before that. There's nobody that I can say were one of the best ever that could play in any era. Anthony Munoz could play in any era. Anybody before that, that wasn't really an offensive line type of era. They were blocking with the two hands up,
Maybe we didn't see Ian. Maybe we didn't see Jim Parker. Maybe
we didn't
see him.
Yeah.
They say he was, say he was fabulous. But I'm with you. I think Munoz sets the tone for the left tackle position. I agree with you.
No doubt. We're talking to Ira Coffin from Joe Bucks fan. We'd be remiss to not talk a little bit about the Buccaneers. We're not going to get too much into them, but we just sat there and watched a 16-game season where it has me shaking my head because as the season progressed, we thought they were good at the beginning. People were asking me if they're going to go to the Super Bowl, and I said, well, no, because they're only 2-1 or whatever they were at the time. And from that point on, they just didn't win a lot of games. Now, the average ham and egger optimistic Buccaneer fan wants to say, well, we could have won 6 more games. That's not the way it works. If you can't rush the passer, if you can't run the football, if you don't do anything consistently well, you're not going to win consistently. You're not going to win consistently. So what did you see this year? At the end of the year, were you optimistic? Because I'm telling you, in a funky, crazy way, when I watched them play the last 3 games, I was saying to myself, they're not that far off. Did you see some of that?
You could make that argument, Ian, but you also know that most NFL games come down to the wire and are close, and you got to learn how to win, and this team didn't know how to do it. Now, look, your points are right. The pass rush, see, that's why I'm not going to give Mike Smith a pass, Ian, but in terms of pass rush, I don't put that on Mike Smith. I don't. Jason Light's got to answer for that.
Mm-hmm.
He has to.
Mm-hmm.
McCoy bashes are out there, and McCoy this, McCoy that, but he's not the problem. You know, he's not Warren Sapp. Never going to be. But
we'll,
he's not the
problem. We'll disagree on that one, Ira. We're going to disagree on
that one. We'll disagree on that one.
But, definitely.
You know, this, you know, counting on Noah Spence.
But who is Noah Spence? I mean, like, we're acting like Ayers and Noah Spence are somebody. Like, when these guys come back, Noah Spence is coming back. Who the hell is Noah Spence? I don't need to go to Noah Spence's statistics to tell me that he's nobody. These guys are nobody. Yeah. Let's go get somebody.
He's a number four defensive end on your roster. Yeah, yeah. That's what he is.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe you squeeze out six sacks from him. But, you know, look, I said this at the time, so it's not like I'm, 2020 vision. I don't know how you felt at the time. Calais Campbell was available in free agency. He wasn't 26. He was 30, 31. But I did my research on Calais Campbell. First of all, I knew he was a tremendous leader, what he meant to the Arizona defense. Hell of a player. And sure enough, the Jags use him at defensive end, right defensive end, exactly what the Bucks need. Right defensive end. He made everybody around them better. Now, there's a lot of talent in Jacksonville. He made everybody around them better. I just named him my defensive player of the year. I get to vote for those AP awards. Calais Campbell was my defensive player. They stepped up. They paid him. The Bucks didn't. The Bucks went with Chris Baker. The Jags went with Calais Campbell. That makes Jason Light look very bad, Ian. Unless it was the Glazers who stepped in, and it might have been.
No, they may have stepped in and said, we can't pay Calais Campbell that money, which would be sad because there's not enough money for me. But he still went and picked Chris Baker because Chris Baker, I'm not sure my old ass couldn't have done that. Whatever that was, I think I could have done whatever he did this year, which was, to me, absolutely nothing.
You know, on Chris Baker, Ian, and I think you backed me up on this. If you're going to have that kind of a demeanor, like a carefree guy and loosey-goosey, and that's fine. But you got to show up on Sunday to back that up, Ian.
Yep.
And he didn't. He didn't. Yeah.
No doubt. Now, you can, like, I have Jason sitting right across from me from Radio Influence, and I have no reason to lie to you. At the beginning of free agency, I said, DeSean Jackson, Calais Campbell. That's what we need, period. And let's go back to Gerald McCoy. You're going to bring up Calais Campbell. Now, right away, you're going to tell me, well, you can't compare McCoy and Campbell. Actually, you can because they play the same position. Now, everybody always says, Gerald McCoy needs somebody to alleviate this, and he needs somebody to make him better. Who did Warren Sapp need to make him better? Who did Calais Campbell need to make him better? Who did Simeon Rice need to make him better when he was in Arizona, when he was just unblockable? Great players don't need anybody else. This is another thing, okay? Great players make people around them better. Gerald McCoy's been here forever. He's never made one other person better. And unfortunately for Gerald McCoy, where he lines up is where I played. So my eye is there 24/7. So I watch every play. You guys see Gerald McCoy blasting off the ball, pushing the guard back. This is not what you're not watching. You're not watching when Gerald McCoy should be spiking, which means a three technique running through the guard's inside shoulder. When he's spiking, you're not watching Gerald McCoy get washed 8 yards to the left of the ball and the ball going straight up the field right where he used to be. I watched this Buccaneer team play when Gerald McCoy is not in there on everything I love. I believe they're a better football team without him. Go back and watch how many times the ball is run right next to Gerald McCoy. He won't reach his arms out because he's tore his biceps, but I don't give a rat's ass you tore your biceps. If you can't reach your arm out, get the hell out of there. Put Clinton McDonald in there, who's going to go in one quarter of the time with under tackle and make the same amount of plays as Gerald McCoy. If I have to go into next year preseason and listen to people tell me Gerald McCoy's going to get double-digit sacks again, I'm going to throw up in my mouth. Because he was just complaining in social media that he didn't make the Pro Bowl. That's a leader? Since when has that been a leader?
He reads too much, and he reads too much. Now, look, I want to throw one thing out at you, my man. And I said this to Mike Smith's face. You're going to give me some newfound respect over here, Mr. Beckles.
Go ahead.
Because I said this to Mike Smith, and I said it after the game, after the New Orleans game. I got him in the locker room 45 minutes later. He was dressed. He was walking out. And I get along good with Mike Smith. We got a lot of respect for each other. But I said this to him, Ian. I didn't pull any punches. And I said, Mike, you guys were 5-11. And if there's one game, you tell me how you feel. If there's one game that I go back to, and it's personal for me because I thought the Bucs were ready to take off after the New England game, and I said they're going to go on a five-game winning streak. It's the worst prediction in the last 10 years other than Trump has no chance. Right. Other than Trump has no chance to win the election.
Correct.
But I did say that, and you can't be more off than I was. Anyway, I said, Mike, the game I point to is Arizona. You had extra time to prepare. The New England game was a Thursday night. You got extra time. They kicked your ass a year ago in that building. And you go in there, and you're 2-2, and I told Mike Smith, I've been watching football for 40 years. The first half of that Arizona game, that was the worst run fits I've seen in 40 years.
Mm.
Absolutely disgraceful. And Smith said to me, well, they had a fresh back. Adrian Peterson was, I said, stop right there, Mike. I said, stop right there. I said, I wasn't there. I watched on TV. And I'm sitting there with my wife. And by the time Carson Palmer, and you're watching the same game as me, Ian, by the time Palmer put the ball on the stomach of Adrian Peterson, I said to my wife, that's a 12-yard game.
Yep.
He hadn't taken his first step yet. I have never seen a team totally overwhelmed on the ground like that. Ian, how do you explain that performance?
I have to say, when we're looking for toughness, where do we go, if I could ask you that, on defense? Where do we go for toughness?
Well, you got to go up front.
Okay, but who is our tough guy up front? Which guy? I dare you. I dare you to say McCoy. I dare you.
Well, I mean, you'd have to look at McCoy.
I'm talking about toughness, you know, now. I'm talking toughness, Ira. I'm not talking about busting up field and helping people off the ground and not making tackles and not making sacks. I'm talking about crucial time plays, toughness. Let's stop this bullshit. Who is that guy? We don't have that guy up front. Quan Alexander may be that guy at linebacker. Up front, we haven't had that guy since Warren Sapp, Simeon Rice. Hey, you can look. Chidi Honatu was better than Gerald McCoy because he made more plays. Brad Culpepper made the same amount of plays as Gerald McCoy in a good defense. You know, and that was one of the best ever. And this is my problem with Gerald McCoy. And I'm going to keep on saying it because nothing ever changes. The guy's played so long. He has no statistics, and he has no results as a defense or as a team. And all he's doing is making Pro Bowls, so congratulations. But to me, I don't see it. I really don't. I wish I saw it. I don't see it.
Well, I'll say this. They got to blow up the defensive line. Whether that includes McCoy or not remains to be seen. I think you'd agree with me that he is coming back next year. He is coming back.
Well, listen, for $18 million right now, why wouldn't you not go out and get something for this guy? If right now he's still marketable, go get some. If you don't want $18 million for 30 tackles and 6 sacks a year, I don't get it. I really don't.
And who do you what do you do with the 3 technique, Ian? Do you move
Clinton McDonald? He's just as good. Because once again, it's how many – if I asked you this, Ira – how many plays does Gerald McCoy make a game? I'm not saying tackles. How many plays does he make a game, would you say?
A couple.
I would say a play and a half. I would say a play and a half because sometimes he disappears for 3 straight games. And he never makes 5 plays. Sometimes I watch Aaron Donald or somebody's like Khalil Mack. The guys are making a dozen plays a game. And they would say, well, they're not the same.
Right.
We've watched Gerald McCoy for years. I've never seen him get 3 sacks. I've rarely seen him get 2 sacks. I've seen him take over. When I mean take over, I mean you busted somebody's ass. They didn't get yards, and you won a football game. That just doesn't happen. And I'm waiting. But for $18 million, to me, I would say good riddance. And if we get some draft picks, go on. When you talk about character, I'm going to say this. Just like you, I have some really good connects with people that used to play with him. And a lot like I was talking about Keyshawn Johnson, he's just out for himself. And if you look at some of his social media and the way he blocked me on social media, he's the only person I've ever seen block me on social media. Okay. He's too dang sensitive to be the leader of a defense. Hardy Nickerson's a leader of a defense. Hardy Nickerson, if you look at him wrong, he's going to punch you in the face. Okay? Gerald McCoy's going to go, you stop looking at me. You're so mean. Stop looking at me. And blah, you wrote this about me. Bullshit. That ain't going to be the leader of my defense. No way. Give me a bad son of a bitch. Quan Alexander's a good start, but we need a mean son of a bitch up front like a Calais Campbell. Let's find that guy, Ira. Let's go find that guy, Ira.
Ian, my number one fault with the Bucks. Number one, they're not physical. They don't have any physicality. That's my number one takeaway from 2017.
Well, that's I can say, you said it one way, I'll say it another way, and it's going to be the same thing. They're not that good up front. The name of my podcast is In the Trenches, because regardless, nobody's ever won in football at any level without good linemen. It's never happened. The Bucks aren't good.
That has to be the story of this offseason.
That's what
the trenches.
But it ain't that easy. It ain't that easy to just revamp something like that, because you just can't bring a bunch of pieces and throw them together and just think that it's going to stick and it's going to work like that.
What's your take on the Marpet experiment?
Failure.
What's your take on
it? It was a failure. We didn't get better at anything. What did we get better at doing? I mean, to me, I thought we were unathletic at guard. And I thought Ali Marpet was the best chance we had to be athletic. Ali Marpet's kind of wasted at center. I thought it was a waste. I think Marpet and Dotson work well together. And I see DeMar every once in a while. He didn't really understand the whole thing. Sweezy, it didn't work with Sweezy. That's for sure. So to me, I would put the kid back. You can get away with I said this once and Tony Mayberry jumped down my throat, but you can get away with a half-assed center sometimes. But when you have a half-ass guard, that's a lot of stuff going on there, seriously.
You know what? I don't disagree with you. I didn't like the move at the time. But, you know, Jason Light swears that when they drafted Marpet, they always had this thing about him being a center. Well, you know what? Sometimes you got to reevaluate. I don't think it's very smart. I would move him back.
Well, I'd move him back. I'll be honest with you. I'm waiting for something smart to happen from the Buccaneers. They haven't done enough smart things to me. I'm hoping for the best, but I'm not going to hold my breath. I'm just hoping in free agency that the Glazers open up their damn pocketbooks and we go out and get some football players, because we didn't have enough football players, unfortunately. Now, Ira, I got to get out of here, brother. I got some business to take care of, but brother, I appreciate you. I've known you for a long time. I've never had any issues with you, and I would tell you if I did, you know that. I think you do wonderful work, and you're with JoeBucksFan.com right now, so how do people get in touch with you? How do they get with you on social media?
You can get Twitter at iKaufman76, three columns a week, couple of podcasts a week. Ian, I'm joining you in the podcast world.
Yeah, man.
And, I'm still around, Ian. I'm still kicking.
Yeah.
And, wish me luck in Minneapolis with Mr. John Lynch, my friend.
Go get him, brother. And don't be scared to bring my name up. Say, Ian Beckles said John Lynch was a bad motherfucker. To say that. Go forget about the word asshole. Say, Ian Beckles said John Lynch was a bad motherfucker. And they don't have to beep that on my podcast, but they might have to beep it for you. Ira, thank you, brother. I appreciate you.
You're welcome. Ian, I got to say, of all your takes, you got good takes, man. You come from an intelligent point of view, and I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. The check's in the mail, sir. I appreciate everybody listening in. This has been In the Trenches. Thanks again to Ira Kaufman from Joe Bucks Fan. And check them out. They do some wonderful work as well. He just gave me credit, but Joe Bucks Fan does some wonderful things for sure all year long, because football never stops. And that's why we're not going to stop this podcast. Much love goes out to Hess Spinal, who is our new sponsor. We're going to be giving you much love for them, because as far as injuries go, if you have any car accident, you got to go to somebody who knows what the hell they're doing, and that's Hess Spinal Center. So appreciate you listening in. Everybody have a wonderful week, and please be safe. Peace out.
You have been in the trenches with Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.
Chris Landry inviting you to join me for Landry Football Podcast every Tuesday and Thursday. We'll give you the coaching and scouting angle to the college and NFL game. Film breakdowns, scouting reports, X's and O's, the latest inside scoop, coaching search information. We've got it all for you. I'll take my experiences as a coach and a scout and bring it to you, the fan, to give you access to the best football information on the college and pro level. Join us at LandryFootball.com and And remember, the Landry Football Podcast right here, as well as Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.